offering coffees and teas, both hot and cold. Also, fresh pastries. The winter market is open Saturdays from 10 until 2 at the Rohde Center for the Arts in downtown Kenosha. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning and welcome to Community Matters on WGTD. I'm your host, Laura Sumner Kuhn, and it's a new year, and I'm very happy to introduce our guest this morning. It's Dr. Penny Leiter-Antineau, who is Academic Director of Health and Wellness at the UW Parkside. So welcome, Penny.
Thank you. Welcome. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Well, I'm so excited to have you today because we're almost 2 weeks into the new year.
Yes.
And I, as I imagine many of our listeners and people throughout the country, make very stringent ideas about what they're going to be able to accomplish in the new year concerning their health and wellness, weight loss, more physical energy and fitness, exercising, and we make all these great goals for the new year. And right around this time of year, we start to fizzle and say, I was really strong on December 31st, and now here we are. I haven't been to the gym yet. So I thought this would be a wonderful time to have you come and speak to us about some reasonable expectations for having a better quality of life when it comes to health and physical fitness.
Well, thank you again for having me on. And yes, it's amazing how many people every year at this time set up a very honest and specific goals for themselves to see if they can't make improvements. Again, whether it's weight loss, whether it's exercise. And a few weeks in, maybe if they're lucky, they make it a month or two. It just sort of starts to, as you mentioned, fizzle out. There's lots of different reasons for that. One of the reasons that I think that people have very high expectations, and that's wonderful, but then life gets in the way. And what they had for this high expectation of goals and objectives all of a sudden doesn't make sense or doesn't fit in with their life and with their routine. And so we often go back to what's comfortable, and we are creatures of habit, and we have established these habits for as many years as we've been old. And so to expect to change those in just a week or 2 weeks or a month is really very unrealistic. And people often get down because they're not able to be successful. And that's probably one of the biggest problems that we see at this time of year is that people are all excited and motivated, and then they fail. And then they just, it's that sort of self-fulfilling prophecy of, I can't ever do this. I'm never going to be successful. I'm never going to like fitness. I'm never going to like exercise. And so it is really, it's a tough time for many people.
I can come up with all kinds of excuses why my resolution so far hasn't flown up to the category of success that I wish it had. At this point, and we're only 2 weeks in, so I'm thinking I have, 11 and a half more months to go, so I can fix this, right? But I think we do tend to beat ourselves up, and then we come up with reasons why, or if we reflect upon it, you know, why is this not working? And I think for a lot of people, time tends to be the biggest reason why they say or they think that they are not being successful in what they've set out. You know, I'm sure you've heard of other things that get in the way of our plans. Would you be able to enlighten us about some of the ways that we maybe sabotage ourselves or maybe parts of life that intersect with our plans that you often hear?
Yeah, oftentimes people will establish goals, again, that are pretty high, and maybe it's something they've thought about for a long time. But oftentimes a lot of the goals that people have at this time of year have a lot to do with disease prevention, or maybe people feel pressured because of society, or maybe they've heard from their physician that, gee, your cholesterol levels aren't good, or your weight's too heavy, and we really want you to try to lose weight. And I think that they look at it already from a negative in that this is something that they have to do. And what we find is that more people tend to be successful if they're doing something that they enjoy doing. And so if we even can reframe our thought process, instead of looking at this as something that I need to do or I have to do or is expected of me or someone wants me to, or even the societal pressures of having a certain look or a certain body, is really approaching it from the negative perspective. And so one of the things that I think really helps people be more successful is to, again, reframe it and think of it as, why? Why is it that you wanted to change? So what goal did you have? And first of all, why? What motivates you? What are your reasons for making the change? Are they for yourself or are they for someone else? And then really evaluating what's of value to you. So for example, if a common goal at this time of year is exercising regularly. Well, and think about it. Exercising regularly in Wisconsin, starting off in January. Now, that's not very appealing to many people because being outside is not something that many people enjoy when it's 20 degrees out or worse. And so really looking at kind of why is it that you want to make this change and finding something that is of true value to you. And maybe the why is I want to be able to play with my grandchildren more. Or maybe the why is I want to be able to garden. Or maybe the why is I want to be able to just get up and go through my daily activities and have enough energy to do the other activities that I want to do that are for fun. And so that's really one of my first steps I would encourage people to think about and really evaluate what are their goals and why. What's the underlying real push for this change to take place? And when it comes to physical activity in particular, because that's a very common one at this time of year, as well as nutrition, maybe sleep or stop smoking. But again, the why always holds true as a good place to start. And then the second thing is if it's physical activity, for example, try to choose some things that are fun. And that's a common question I get from people all the time is what's the best exercise for me to do? Is it running? Is it high-intensity training? Is it swimming? Is it cross-country skiing? And I'm going to answer, the best exercise for anyone to do is the exercise that you will do. And so maybe walking doesn't burn the most calories or maybe isn't going to elicit the highest cardiovascular response. But if it's something that you can do and that you will do and maybe you can find enjoyment and pleasure in, then that's the best one to do.
Oh, that's wonderful advice, especially for people who maybe are starting from ground zero. They work at a desk all day. They know that they should be more active. But by the time they get home in the evening, that couch looks very, very comfortable. What is it that I can do? Is it, you know, taking a further parking spot away
Yes.
from the doors of my office? Or is it making sure I walk up and down the stairs several times a day instead of, you know, letting somebody else do the laundry or whatever the case might be? So are there incremental ways that people can move from ground zero to some satisfying regular exercise that they haven't had or physical activity.
I like to refer to it really as physical activity so that people have an appreciation for just moving our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of newer research now that shows that just sitting for too long period of time can be detrimental to our health. And so that we are looking at, you may be working out excessively on the weekends or maybe even in the evenings for a half an hour or 2 hours. But if you sit at your desk all day long, that's not very healthy for you in the long run. So if we look at just some little things that anyone can do or most people can do, and that is to, if you are seated at a desk for a long period of time for your job, or even if it's just in your leisure, to get up and move. Just get up and walk around. Even standing while working is more beneficial. At least it keeps the blood flowing throughout the body and you're not finding some of the negative impact of just sitting. Doing some things like, as you mentioned, taking the stairs instead of the elevator, that's a really easy one to do. And next thing you know, if you keep trying to do that, you don't even realize you're doing it. And so those are just some really little ways. Again, parking, maybe the first parking spot you see instead of driving all around and getting the one closest up there. And even better yet, if we're thinking about maybe when it's a little bit nicer out for some people, if you can walk or bike to your work or to the grocery store or to the library or someplace It's better for the environment. It's better for your health. It's better for traffic. So it has a lot of pluses when we look at just implementing increase in movement in our daily activities. So it doesn't have to be a regimented exercise program that people often look at as being uncomfortable or a punishment, but rather it's just improving and increasing our movement on a daily basis.
What would be an ideal amount of time per day that somebody should be actively moving around?
We'd like to see people be moving around at least 30 to 60 minutes a day. Even for children, our youth, we want them to be active for 60 minutes a day, and that's every day. Again, it doesn't have to be this real high intensity, you know, where I'm running super fast or that I'm biking super fast or that I'm even at the gym. It can be just walking. Obviously, the higher the intensity of it, you're going to see a little bit better improvement and you're going to exert a little bit more energy. But the bottom line is that we want to be something that people enjoy and can sustain. Because if it's something that's not pleasant, or in other words, maybe even punishing, it feels like to certain individuals, then that has the opposite effect. We want people to enjoy moving. And the best way to enjoy moving is to engage in activities that you do find enjoyment in. So even dancing or roller skating, gardening is actually a very healthy physical activity of daily living that we'd like to see people engaged in.
That's good to hear. I would imagine that it's even more difficult as people age to find activities that they are capable of doing or that don't hurt or stress their joints, or that they might be afraid to do because they'd be afraid they'd be stressing joints or other areas of their body that maybe they feel are a little less strong than they had been in the past. And I don't know if some of those suggestions you've just given are wonderful suggestions that they could work in their daily life. Are there others for older people that they might consider or that you've heard people?
Sure. Even exercises. I mean, there's a whole program for exercising while you're still seated. Aquatic environments are great environments for individuals, especially with individuals with joint issues. We have a variety of facilities in our community around here that have an aquatic setting. We encourage individuals to try to get involved in that. And it's not even the movement. While that's very important, but again, finding the why and the meaning and the fun to it is really the social impact of it. And the social connection with others is often what makes exercise more enjoyable for most people. I mean, I'm one of those individuals. My family are very into fitness and exercise. And that's my profession. So for us, I'm like, oh, yeah, let's go do this. Let's go do that. But I have to think that there are many, many people out there who don't think the same way that I do or that my husband does. So just think about what can you do to increase your physical activity that is something fun and enjoyable that you don't perceive to be punishment.
Once you get to that phase where you're incorporating more physical activity in your life, there's also a lot of discussion of, as you age, losing physical strength and doing some strength training.
Sure.
And strength exercises just to be able not to lose your muscle mass. So what are some easy ways that people can incorporate some of that into their daily lives?
Thank you for bringing that up, because that is a very important piece as we get older, that we work to maintain our overall strength, and women in particular. Women start off with, in general, less amount of muscle mass than men do. They're typically, on average, smaller in size. So we find that women are in particular interest and need of increasing that fitness level when it's related to increasing strength. So just some things, even if you're in your house using canned goods and doing things yourself. So maybe if you are baking a cake, and I know that's very stereotypical female, but whomever you are, if you're baking a cake, instead of using the mixer, just stir it up yourself. So doing all those activities even around the house, instead of using, not this time of year, but in the spring or summer or fall, instead of using the leaf blower or something, rake it or sweep it so you actually are doing some of that movement, because that's going to help maintain your strength And obviously, there's even some ways in which you can improve it. So joining a group exercise class at one of our local health and fitness facilities or YMCAs, RecPlex, whatever it might be. There's lots of different facilities around here that have some programs specifically designed for aging population that have resistance training programs and resistance training equipment. So we encourage individuals to look at it from that perspective, too.
Great. So now you've gotten us off the couch and you've gotten us doing some physical activity that we like. We might even endeavor to lift up soup cans repetitively to build up some strength or join a gym to do some strength training. Let's shift a little bit to the nutrition part of it. So, so many people concentrate, and I myself am included, on how do I reduce my weight to a point where I'm happy with it and not feel as though I am depriving myself of anything. So what are some healthy nutritional things that people should be doing to achieve not only perhaps weight loss, but just a overall feeling of good health?
I think that one of the things I would like for more people to focus on is a sense of well-being and mindfulness and being aware of what are the foods that you are eating and what is the nutritional quality of the foods. So often today we are bombarded with quick foods, fast foods, prepared foods, and many individuals now are seeing and reaping the benefits of eating more natural and whole food products. And even getting back to that increasing in physical activity or physical movement, if you are a gardener, that is a wonderful way to connect to the environment, to produce your own very healthy foods, to appreciate that, to get back to nature a little bit, which we have found to be a great reducer of stress in many individuals. So just looking back and trying to eat more whole foods and being more mindful and cognizant of the foods that you actually do eat. Like I often think, I always use in my classrooms when I'm teaching a little bit about nutrition or eating healthier, I use the example of a Cheeto or a cheese puff or whatever the brand it is that you might consume. And they're very popular. I mean, a lot of my college students love those. And I'm like, so why is it that you like that? And they're like, it tastes good. I'm like, okay, here, try it. And so sometimes I'll give them, I was like, what is it about it that tastes good? And then I have them really stop and chew slowly and think about it. And if you think about it, it's like styrofoam with a lot of different sodium and other chemicals on it to give it some sort of flavor. But if you think about it, that's not really a normal food product that we would consume. But it is interesting how, you know, what we're conditioned to eat is what we start to eat when we are children, and that we continually get bombarded with media messages on purchase this, buy that. And next thing you know, because of time or whatever, we are eating a lot of fast food, processed foods. So I encourage people to slow down, be mindful of what they're eating, and to try to get back and eat more whole foods and less processed foods.
So many strategies that we are bombarded with as well. No carbs, they're all different kinds of diets per se that will restrict one thing or another. In your time in your field, have you noticed one mantra that seems to work through that all? You know, so that we, I think we've seen shifts where people will only, there are people who will like, I think healthy fats are good. I'm just going to eat everything that has healthy fat and stay away from carbs and, you know, high protein, low fat. There are all these combinations, and it's mind-boggling. And I've got to think, this probably wasn't so difficult like a century ago
right. For
people who were just eating because they needed to live.
Right. Really looking at kind of why are we eating and mm-hmm. what's the purpose and meaning and value of it, going back to sort of my original statement of finding ways to enhance our quality of life in general. And there is every diet out there that you could ever imagine. And even if you put diet on an advertisement, you know, it's going to increase the sales of a magazine or a hit on the internet. So it is interesting how we still focus on dieting a lot, where dieting really means what we're eating. And so anytime a diet has a lot of restrictions to it, again, it goes back to individuals look at that as sort of a punishment or a negative. And so, again, if we can reframe that and have people start to look at, okay, why am I eating? What do I enjoy? and going back to finding foods and really being aware of when they're eating. And I know I'm guilty of it, like many people are. I'm always in a hurry. You know, I'm trying to get from one thing to the next, take my kids here, take my kids there, get to work, go here for a volunteer, whatever it is that I'm engaged in. And so sometimes I'm grabbing food and I forget, like, wait a minute, this is really important. We need to slow down. And even that family time with individuals and eating is a really critical piece for the social and relationship building. So there is no, in my mind, there is no one great way to diet. The great way to diet, in my opinion, and professionally is to make sure and try to eat more whole foods and more well-balanced and be more cognizant of the foods that you are eating. What works for some doesn't work for others, that's for sure.
Yes, all personal preference ties into that, right? I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to WGTD's Community Matters, and our guest today is Penny Leiter Antineau, who is a professor of health and wellness at UW Parkside. So we're happy to have her here today. So now you've gotten us to be a little more cognizant about what we're eating. You've gotten us off the couch and being a little more physically active in something that we enjoy. All through this, there's a concentration of what do you enjoy? So where does mindfulness, as you've mentioned, mindfulness maybe in the arena of calming ourselves down or making time for reflection, enter into success of any of these things? Do you study that at all? Has that been a part of your research or what you've been working on?
It hasn't been a part of my research other than it's a part of what I try to keep updated in the literature and other people's research. It's not research in particular that I've been engaged with. I have a lot of anecdotal examples of working with students and other faculty and staff and even maybe family members on the importance of really when we're looking at, as you mentioned at the very beginning of this session, talking about like those exercise goals that you have and nutrition goals that you have. And one of the things that we're seeing in our industry right now is a greater focus and push for that overall well-being. And so it's not just exercising and eating well. That's the most important thing. It's really about finding balance in your life and really being mindful. And even the World Health Organization and our national health institutes are really focusing now more on health-related quality of life and well-being and not just on the prevention of diseases or looking at how to decrease your risk for diseases. And that really resonates with me, and maybe it's because I'm getting older too, but I've seen a lot of diets come through the research. I've seen a lot of different exercise regimens come through, and I've seen many people fail and succeed and fail and succeed. And when I think about it, at the end of the day, I think it's most important that we look at what is making us feel happy and content. And it's not just the physical, because that's what, when people establish goals and objectives for the new year, that's often about the physical domain. And we are all connected, our mind, our body, our spirit, our social aspect. And so to look at it more holistically, I think, is a healthier approach. And I think that hopefully we'll be able to help people find greater success instead of always focusing on the negatives, like what's going to cause this disease or what's going to prevent this disease, and looking at it as a punishment. Look at it as, what do you get from movement? What enjoyment do I have? Why is it important for me to do this or to not do that? And trying also to be a little bit more kind to yourself and be flexible. And I used to teach only about having specific concrete goals. And while I still think that's important, we need to make sure that we set goals that we can attain, that are consistent with our values and our goals and our purpose and things that we find enjoying. And really be flexible in the sense that, you know, maybe the goal of working out every day or being physically active for 60 minutes a day is not realistic. And it's often not for someone who hasn't been moving. But maybe it's realistic to think of, I'm going to increase the number of days that I move or the number of minutes, or I'm going to be more cognizant and take the stairs now instead of the elevator. And so just little improvements can sometimes help people feel that, help gain that sense of self-efficacy where they feel like they can do it. Maybe it's signing up for the first 5K in the spring. that's a great motivator for getting people off the couch if they've never done it and they're fearful of not even being able to complete it. But maybe it's walking that first one, or maybe it's walking half of it. So I think finding some flexibility in your goals and objectives is also important, and being kind to yourself, but still challenge yourself. I think that that's where we start to feel even greater sense of accomplishment, when we do sort of have a greater sense of self-actualization or greater improvements in what we find important and truly valuable.
I think that's really important advice, not just to set a goal that we know we can accomplish, but challenge ourselves a little bit with that goal. Be flexible in it, but have so that you do have some sense of fulfillment. You do have some sense of accomplishment, because that helps fuel motivation for the next goal that you might want to try to set. I think you said something else that that is really important, is that the physical aspect of our lives aren't the only things that we want to be satisfied with. And I think oftentimes there's some hyper concentration on that part of life, to the exclusion perhaps of how are we socially involved in the world? How are we personally fit in our mind and in our spirit? You know, what sense of solace do we carve out for ourselves? Because we tend to be very busy people. And I think often overlooked is a sense of rest in our overall wellness. Is that something that you talk about at all?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Lack of sleep is really a huge problem in our country in particular right now. And that, you know, people tend to brag about how many hours they worked every week. And, you know, you start to think, at what cost, and how productive are they really or truly doing in their job performance if they're working 60 or 70 hours and they're not getting enough sleep, or they are on so much caffeine just to keep them awake to get through the day. And so, again, taking that step back. And I'm the academic director for an online master's program in health and wellness management. And that's a huge focus for us in that program, and that we're seeing a lot of the corporations, companies, municipalities are really starting to find the true value of employee wellness and employee health promotion, and looking at that whole, are people, when they are present, because it's not just about being at work, because oftentimes they look at absentee numbers, but we're now looking at presentee numbers, which it seems kind of weird, but it's really looking at, are they really present while they're there at work? And that's a better indicator of how productive your employees are. It's not just about, are they there or did they miss work? Because many times people come to work even when they're sick, and we know that's the worst thing you could do.
Sure.
One, you're then spreading the germs to everyone else, especially right now in with the flu going around. But to also look at, how productive are they? And people change jobs or choose a career for a variety of different reasons, and only a small portion of that has to do with the financial aspect of it. Many times people will look at, how much fulfillment or how much value do I feel I have in that particular job? And so that's something that I think a lot of employers are looking at now, and trying to establish a higher quality of life and well-being in their workplace. At least that's what I think the better corporations and companies and municipalities are doing. And it also decreases healthcare costs.
Right, and it's reconditioning ourselves.
Absolutely.
To think that we have to be in this competitive kind of frame of mind and production-oriented. I think many people find that they can be very productive if they have certain smaller portions of concentrated time to be in the flow of their work, and then take a little break, get up, stand up, you've been sitting too long, or whatever, be engaged a little with your coworkers, and then go back at it. You know, there's all different kinds of strategies that seem to be emerging for us to be considering,
right,
that break the paradigm of what we've been used to in the last couple decades of, you know, work hard, work hard, work hard, work hard. But some of that is not really work. It's
right.
Just
and at what price? At what price?
At what price? Right. What happens to the rest of your family life?
Right.
That sometimes we forget.
And the burnout that often comes as a result of really overworking. And not only that, some of the other negative health consequences. And if we think about it, too, I'm seeing a huge shift in many companies and corporations, and even at our institution. Like, I'll go around our campus, and there's a lot more individuals with standing desks now. And so that's a very common way. It's just a little thing, but it is a way for people to just increase their activity and increase their overall sense of feeling better. And even things like there are little pedal things you can do underneath the desk. And I've seen that even probably 20 years ago or so. And I thought, well, that was kind of silly. And now they're coming back again. And now with some really strong evidence that's supporting that that's a positive thing. Or even instead of having a meeting that you're sitting around a big table or conference table for an hour, because that's a funny thing I find with meetings. It's like, it has to be an hour long. Like, what's magic about an hour? Why not 20 minutes and why not maybe have 10 minutes walking or whatever it might be, but somehow just trying to get it to where you're not sitting that whole time. And we all know we've been at meetings where your mind's wandering 20 different directions by the end of that meeting. If you're lucky, only 20 different directions. So just finding some little ways. And we're seeing a lot of corporations and companies and organizations and municipalities are really starting to value their employees. And when their employees feel valued, they're going to be much better employees, and they're going to stay there.
Absolutely.
So that turnover rate is huge in the cost-wise for companies, so that's a great way to decrease that.
Have you come across the effects of our increased screen time in health and wellness? Because that is a huge issue, I find, that's getting talked about these days. It's difficult to have a day where you're not staring at some kind of screen, whether it's your cell phone or your computer or the television set, whatever the iPad or Kindle or whatever. What are you finding, and how does that affect our health?
Well, that's a great question, and I wish I had the answer to that myself, as well as many other professionals and many other parents, I might add. I think that the general consensus is that definitely it can be of concern if we are spending a lot of time on the screen. And I think that the answer to the impact is still yet to come. I think we just don't know yet. There's some evidence that I have seen, and this is not my expertise area, but there's some clear evidence related to health anyway, that the more screen time that you spend, the more time you spend at a screen, whatever kind of screen it is, the increased risk of obesity and the increased risk of those what we call hypokinetic diseases, those diseases that are related to low movement. So hypo meaning too low of movement. And so we know that the leading cause of death, they're mostly related to our lifestyle choices. And so many of those are related to the lack of movement. So screen time, and there's a lot of other research now looking at its impact on mental health, in particular mental health of our youth. And I think that's still kind of unknown. And even the recommendations from the national organizations have shifted a little bit over time. But the general consensus is that, too much of anything is probably not good. And that screen time, too much of that is probably not good, too, for a variety of reasons.
Right. And it isn't always our youngsters who
are. No, absolutely not.
A lot of adults have gotten into that mode. Because in some ways, screens are necessity.
Absolutely.
And we don't know where that dividing line is. And to find healthy alternatives of movement or of socialization or of peace, unplugging, are really important. And we tend to forget that because we live in a world where it's so emphasized. So all really good suggestions for us. There was something I read about just a few weeks ago, and it had to do with the benefits of volunteering and the sense of fulfillment and what kind of health benefits there are to that. So you recently just kind of incorporated a number of those ideas in one of your classes. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So I think what you're referring to is community-based learning experiences that actually we've been embedding. Our campus is really founded on engagement and engagement with our community. And that's really one of our strengths and one of our pillars. I recently became the interim director, faculty director of community-based learning or community engagement on our campus. And one thing that I've been involved with for quite some time is really embedding service learning and community-based learning experiences for students for, again, a whole host of benefits. One, it's a benefit to the students themselves because it better connects the content in the class to a real-life situation. Second, as you also mentioned, that benefit of volunteering and how that helps improve overall sense of self-worth and benefit to themselves and to the community. And also we hope that it benefits the community partner. And that's, it really needs to be a win-win-win in all instances. And so one thing that we did recently, I think as I was talking to you earlier, my women's health issues class, which is kind of a real strong interest of mine, actually for the last probably 6 to 7 years now, have partnered with the Women's Resource Center in Racine. It's a domestic violence shelter, and they have two different locations, one west of the interstate in Dover and one in downtown Racine area. And so my students have done various projects with them. The first time we worked with them, they actually came in and provided exercise classes for not only the individuals who were living there who had experienced domestic violence, but also the workers in that environment, because many of the workers in these types of environments that are high stress often also need a lot of nurturing and self-care. And so that was one of the projects that we did. We also collected slightly used or brand new exercise equipment that individuals could actually utilize once they left the facility, and then we left some there too at the facility. Most recently, my students, every year I offer this course every other year, and every year that we offer it, the students come up with slightly different ideas. We work with the agency themselves, in this case Women's Resource Center. We find out what their needs are, and then the students do some research on the topic. So they research domestic violence, they research what the needs are in high stress environments, etc. And then they come together to help work with the agency and to partner with them to figure out what is possible or what's doable. And this year, I was really proud of my students again. They always amaze me. We were able to write a grant, and so we received a grant for $12,000. And they also actually worked on soliciting money or resources from other local agencies too, and we've yet to hear back from those because it takes a little while when you're writing grants. But some other things they did is we actually went to both sites. We provided a healthy, nutritional meal. We cooked for them, we ate with them, and then we cleaned up everything. So it's something that they could just be pampered a little bit. And we talked a little bit about healthy eating. And then we also had them engage in just a healthy activity. And in this case, it was creating those fleece blankets that they tie. Oh. So we actually brought all the materials, and we actually made them with the individuals who were living there and with the workers there too. Because again, that's another population who is really important to take care of because they're so busy taking care of these individuals who are in great need. We also realized that many of them didn't have pictures or their children's pictures. For those who had children, didn't have pictures of their kids from school because they couldn't afford to pay for the school pictures. And so one of our students had taken a photography class and said, well, I can take some. And so we came in, we took pictures, we took photos, did a little photo shoot, got them some picture frames, let them choose. We edited them a little bit. And so that was another gift that they were able to have so they could look back at their time there and hopefully move forward. But again, helping increase their self-worth a little bit.
Oh, that's a wonderful project. And I would imagine you'll look forward to the next.
Yes, yes.
And I'm sure you hear of many others as
Absolutely.
You are in that Office of Community Engagement. So that's a wonderful thing. But I think we overlook that. I think many people think, oh, I am going to volunteer to help this person, but they're not thinking about the benefits that they're actually getting from doing that, you know, and just in segmenting time to be socially active in your community and feel a part of the community and feeling as though you have something to offer somebody else, and then just making that human connection has so much to do with our health and well-being. Particularly people who might be isolated otherwise can really start thinking about how might I be able to use what other gifts and talents I might have in the community to be inactive with somebody else for my own benefit as well as theirs. Something we don't think about often enough, I think, in our day and age. So,
and it helps on a social level as well as, you mentioned, a personal level. You know, there's a theory called downward social comparison. And, you know, it's amazing how you can look at your life and start to wallow in, gee, this is really bad and this is horrible. And then all of a sudden, when you start to volunteer and help others, And it's not just helping others, that you're this great person that's helping others, but that it's really comes from a good place and a good reason. And that we often find a lot more benefits themselves, individuals who volunteer, than even the people who are receiving whatever services you might be providing. And I think that's the biggest plus.
As a society, Penny, what kind of challenges do you think, if you could name the top three challenges that we would have, either in the local community or in society in general, when it comes to overall health and wellness, what are the three biggest challenges that you think we might face?
Three biggest challenges. Well, I think one of them is just the societal pressure to succeed in whatever succeed means in our society. And it's always that working more, being perfect, being healthy. And I think that we need to, again, sort of reframe our thoughts and start to slow down a little bit, and not slow down in what we accomplish necessarily, but slow down in our intention and be more meaningful in what we're doing. And that's hard. That's hard. I mean, even unplugging. I mean, I think it's important to unplug. And it sounds like it's so easy, but try it. It's really a challenge. And having that be okay. Because everyone thinks, what do you mean you're unplugged? And what do you mean I can't reach you? You know what? You know, that to me is a challenge of really facing our societal pressures into doing things because we think we need to, or because if we want to be competitive, then we have to do this or do that. So I think just reframing that. And I think really being kind and compassionate to ourselves as well as to others, I think that's a huge challenge, particularly today, or in light of what's happening at the social and even international level, but just trying to find more similarities that we have with others, because nothing is more stressful on the body than anxiety and anger and fear. So even trying to find connections with other individuals and just having greater passion and empathy, I think is one of our challenges that we have, and is also can be exceptionally rewarding. And also I think the challenge of really everything being so processed and so fast and instant gratification. And that's one of the things we've noticed with our youth, as well as even individuals' minds. Like, we want it now, you know, because we can, in many ways. We can now find information about anything we want instantaneously. And so really being challenging ourselves and saying, you know what, we're not going to get instant gratification, and we need to be okay with that. And so that to me is a challenge. I even struggle with my own family and my own children, and helping them understand the importance of patience and being mindful and really slowing down a little bit. But I know it's kind of a dichotomy. On one hand, I'm saying slow down. On the other hand, I'm like, move. But it's move more intentional and with purpose and with fun, and as opposed to just moving because you feel like you have to move.
Right. Oh, wonderful advice for us in this new year. So I thank you so much for leaving us with these ideas of how we could maybe face the challenges that society offers us, how we can embrace the ideas of moving a little bit more this year, even if it isn't up to what our strategic goals were in the beginning of the year, and just being happy with what we're doing and finding those balances of life that just gives us a wonderful quality of life.
Yeah, it's really about, when I talk about wellness in general, it's really a balance of your physical well-being, your emotional well-being, your social well-being, for many people, the spiritual well-being, even the intellectual and gaining knowledge. It's not just the physical. We often focus so much on the physical, and while that's important, it's not the only thing. And we really need to really look at ourselves holistically and look at it on a societal level holistically too.
Well, thank you so much, and I wish you a very happy new year.
Thanks, same to you. Be well.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more is available 24 hours a day on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org, where you can listen live, online, 24 hours a day. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz WGTD HD2 is available via HD radio. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, the perfect escape from the chill of winter, a hot bowl of soup, and a cafe latte. Also take advantage of the winter sale happening now in the gift shop, 2401 60th Street, Kenosha.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Parkside seeks nominations for its 2019 Distinguished Alumni Awards due February 6th.